Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
And now, Bill and Alyssa from the Q Morning Show present Can't Read, Can't Write.
Welcome to our second episode of Can't Read, Can't Write.
Woo!
Alyssa and I launched this podcast because we are both Flashes, alumni of Kent State University. And we realized that Kent State played such an important part of our lives as we were getting started with our careers. Not only that, though, but in shaping our lives. It gave us so many life lessons, and we have so many stories to share, and that's what we're doing on this podcast. So last week, we talked about when I landed in Kent for the first time at Clark Hall, and during that time, I got my second job in radio ever. The story ended when I got hired for the first time right here at Q104 back in 1996. So that's where we ended the story. If we pick it up, it'll be on a future episode of Can't Read, Can't Write. But today, in this episode, we get into the origin story of one Alyssa Rose.
Me.
So where do we begin? The year was
2011. Yeah, how's that feel?
Not good. Actually, not good. I mean, 2011 means a lot to me because I was just starting the job before I had this one, and then Will was born in 2011, and you were just starting college in 2011.
I was just starting college. I had just gotten my nose pierced, graduated from high school, and made my way down to Kent State.
Was that any kind of a fight that you got your nose pierced?
Oh my God, yeah.
With who specifically?
So my mom was totally cool with it, but she was actually out of town. It was the summer. It was like July after I graduated high school. She was out of town. So I texted her and was like, hey, like where should I go get my nose pierced? And she was like, oh, dude, can you please like just wait until I'm home? I was already 18 at this point. I was like, no, like I'm going to go. Just tell me a place to go.
Why did she want you to wait in case something went wrong?
No, she just wanted to take me and like it's my first experience in like a tattoo shop. Mm-hmm. So she wanted to make sure that I was going somewhere clean, sterile, safe, all that. Yada, yada.
That's where you get your nose pierced at a tattoo shop?
Yeah, that's where you get piercings done. But the fight happened with my grandparents. Mm. So I'm really close with my grandparents, like especially growing up. I saw them every single day. I mean, I caught the bus from their house. My nonna packed me lunches like all through school. But when I got my nose pierced, I got it pierced with a hoop. So it's always been a hoop. They didn't talk to me for like weeks.
Really?
They were so mad.
Is that how they discovered it? Your grandparents saw your nose ring for the first time, or you gave them a heads up? You said, by the way, I did a thing.
No, they just saw it.
They were not happy.
No, they weren't happy. But it grew on them, and they're fine with it now. It's been, what, 13 years with it? So
what was their objection?
I honestly don't know. They've really never gotten mad at me for anything like that. That was the first time and the only time, really.
That you were defacing your perfect face.
I guess. I don't know. I like it, though. I don't. Every time I take it out, I'm like, who is she? I don't know her.
Yeah. How often do you wear it now?
Every day. I've never.
Oh, you are wearing it right now.
Yeah. You've never seen me without it.
I just can't see that far. Well, I have my reading glasses on right now, which enables me, or it doesn't enable me, to see very far. So, okay, that's why I didn't see it.
Anyways, right. Though. So, yes. Yeah, the year is 2011.
Woo!
I got to Kent State, and my entry into radio was through good old Black Squirrel Radio. Love of my life.
I'm familiar.
BSR.
Although my experience with Black Squirrel Radio is probably different than yours. So, when I went to Kent, Black Squirrel Radio could only be heard in your dorm room.
Like on the TV?
No, on an actual radio.
Oh, yeah, no. When I went there, we did not have an actual like radio dial.
Yes.
They still don't. It's just internet only, like it's online. But there was like a station in dorm rooms, like on your TV,
okay,
that would play it.
Okay.
So that, yeah,
that's an upgrade. Yeah. So I don't remember what it was on your radio dial inside your dorm. It was like, I don't know, 89.4 or that doesn't even make sense. There is no 89.4. But that's where it was. And then you would go there and the signal was terrible. I mean, there was no signal at all. It sounded awful.
Oh, I imagine. Yeah.
And I think that was really the only place to access Black Squirrel Radio in the early 90s.
Oh.
I still think anything like that, any kind of college radio, I think anything that you do is going to be beneficial in helping to launch your career. So I don't think that the kids cared that much. You wanted to be heard.
Oh, well, yeah, we wanted to be heard, but I don't think that I would say that it was particularly beneficial career-wise. Like, because, so, I'll start from the very beginning.
Yes.
So, the very beginning, I majored in broadcast journalism, but going in, I thought that I wanted to do television. I thought. And very quickly, I mean, in my first 2 weeks of being at Kent, I was like, oh my God, no, I don't.
What turned you off to, because I'm assuming you're talking about TV2.
Uh-huh.
What turned you off to TV2?
So that's where the nose ring comes in, is because I had just gotten my nose pierced and I'm like, well, I don't want to take this out to be on television. And you couldn't pay me to wear heels. And those girls were always wearing heels and pencil skirts. And they, I mean, they looked bomb.com, but it couldn't be me. I was like, I'm going to wear sweatpants and sweatshirts every day. And that's how I'm going to live my life. So radio is where I landed.
As you continue with this story here, I just want to make a note to myself. I once went on a date with a girl who worked for TV2. She was one of the news anchors.
Uh-huh.
And I have to tell you about that date because it's one of the most unusual dates that I've ever been on in my life.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. So there we go. Future episode of the Can't Read, Can't Write podcast.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. But so my very first show, auditioned. First,
how do you get on Black Squirrel Radio?
Well, like, that's what I was going to say, is you have to audition.
You have to audition. So how do you find out about the auditions?
So, I mean, I was in Franklin Hall. That's where all the journalism kids are. And there was, I mean, like posters all over the place. So like I knew that auditions were happening. There was also like the chalk artwork all around campus for audition dates and times and all that good stuff.
Before you tell me about the audition, where did you get your love of radio? Like, when did you first realize that, oh, I like radio. Radio is my thing. I think I could be into this. I think I can do this.
It probably wasn't until like end of my sophomore year of college. Mm-hmm. But like my love definitely came through Black Squirrel.
Okay. So like it was just an interest.
It was just an interest. And I was like, oh, like, I don't want to do TV. I'm already in this major. Mm-hmm. I'll do something. Radio seems fun. I like music.
Okay.
And so I just kind of landed there. But what's really cool, so I did a show my freshman year with one of my guy friends from high school. And honestly, we weren't even that close. I was just like, I need a co-host. Nobody wanted to do it with me. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm down. And I was like, okay. So we did a show together our freshman year. We were one of only three freshman shows.
Really?
That got picked to do a show that year.
Well, tell me about the audition process.
Oh, God. I don't even remember being on the other end of it because I was at BSR all 4 years of Kent. And really? I ended up running auditions by the end because I was general manager by my senior year.
Oh, you worked your way up.
I worked my way up. I went from on air to street marketing director to program director to general manager.
But that first audition, do you even recall it? Do you
not
remember?
Really.
Do you remember like you just sat down in a microphone for the first time and?
Yeah, you sit down in a studio with like the leaders of like the student leaders of the radio. You pitch them your show, what you want it to be about, what kind of music you want to play, and then you just kind of leave it there and you wait a couple days. And when I actually got the call that we got the show, I don't know why I remember this so vividly, but I was in Eastway. I was in the showers. of like my dorm room. And I'm sure they were the same when you went there, but each shower had like its own little like room. And I was in one of those shower rooms and I'd like just gotten out of the shower and my phone's ringing and I answer and they're like, you got a show. And I was so excited. And then I just like hung out in there for a while and was like, oh my God. And I was like, so stoked. I like called my family. I was like, I got a show. It was called Hot and Angsty was my first show.
And your audition, was it with your friend from high school? Was he on that first audition? Okay, yeah. So you both got it.
Yeah, so we both got it.
So when did Hot and Angsty go on the air for the first time?
Probably like mid-September of 2011.
All right.
That was the first show.
What was your air shift time? Did they give you the middle of the night or did you have like a decent time during the day?
We had a decent time. I want to say it was like 6 to 8 on like maybe Mondays or something.
That's not bad at all.
No, it wasn't bad at all. It was like actually a really decent shift for a first year freshman show because a lot of other people were doing like noon to 2 and like stuff like that. But no, we got a pretty good slot. I do remember that we did really well because we would have ratings come out every week of like who had the most listeners for the week. And we did really well.
No kidding.
We did like awards at the end of the semester and almost every semester up until I got to like management and I just stopped caring about my on-air show. And I had so many other things to do at that station. I got an award though, like almost every semester.
So I lost my train of thought there for a second. So for this show, did you market it or anything like that? Or like, how did people know to tune in and listen on Monday nights?
Well, so Instagram wasn't a thing yet. That didn't happen until toward the end of my freshman year. But we made like a Facebook page. Facebook was a lot bigger at that time. So I get a lot of memories that pop up now that it's me promoting like, listen to Hot and Angsty, blah, blah, blah. But so what's really funny about this show, though, is we did do it the entire freshman year. What I failed to mention, though, is that a couple months in, my co-host and I kind of started like seeing each other. Oh. It didn't really end well.
Romantically.
Yeah. Hot and Angsty got a little too hot and way too angsty. We hated each other by the end of it.
Okay, so this guy that you knew from high school, was there any romantic feelings towards him before you did the audition for Black Squirrel Radio?
No, not really.
But then just working together and seeing him and doing this show together, that's when you started to develop feelings.
I mean, I also was like just coming out of like a year plus relationship from high school. Like we broke up, I want to say like October, me and my high school ex-boyfriend. So yeah, it was just like right place, right time. One of those things. But yeah, we like literally couldn't stand each other by the end of the show. And like we started taking turns on who was going to do the show that week. Because we just didn't even want to be in the same room.
You split up and you would only be on by yourself?
So we started doing that by the end. But it was fun. It was a great like first experience. And then obviously I stayed. And I did a show my sophomore year called Sleazy Beats. And that was with one of my friends from my freshman floor, a girl. And that one was so fun. That was just like messy, trashy. It was... Oh my God, I loved that show. Sleazy Beats was probably like my most fun show.
Like, what would you talk about?
Honestly, just like dorm life gossip.
Okay.
Like just normal college gossip. And like we'd have people call in with like these crazy stories.
I love that.
And they're all our friends. But like crazy party stories. Like we definitely were like party girls at this time. Right. We were in a lot of frat basements, a lot of sticky floors. But it was super fun. Third year. That one was Mixed Nuts was the name of my show. And that's by this time I'm like in management. And this is like all of like the managers of the radio. This was our show was Mixed Nuts. And they were all a year older than me, though. So they graduated that year, my junior year. And then my senior year, I was left by myself. And then I had a show. I think it was called Roses Are Red. But I'm going to be so honest. I gave myself the worst slot. And I like barely ever even did a show.
What is the worst slot?
It was probably like 10 a.m. to noon or something. Like,
why is that the worst slot? Because
people are in class.
Yeah, then nobody's listening at that time.
Yeah, people are in class. People are working. Like, it wasn't a slot that people wanted. But I was just more so using that time to work because I, by the end of my tenure at Kent State, I literally lived at that radio station. I took naps. I stayed overnight in that radio station multiple times, like many times.
It was that much work?
It was so, it's a student run station.
Right.
So anytime that anything ever went wrong, tech wise, anything, I was the one that had to come fix it.
They didn't have like...
And shows ran from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. So I'd be getting calls as late as 2 a.m.
And they wanted to be that way. They set it up to be that way. They didn't have like a faculty advisor or like
actual... There was a faculty advisor, but they weren't Kent State staff.
Gotcha.
So it was actually somebody that worked at a different station. I don't know if I can like say the station on here, but a different station around this area. Mm-hmm. That served as our like faculty advisor, even though he wasn't technically like faculty.
Okay.
So,
that's crazy.
Anytime anybody got locked out ever, which was all the time, I had to go let them in. I had to wake up early. And by early, I mean 10 a.m. I had to wake up early to go let people in on the weekends. I mean, it was basically like running a summer camp for 100 plus weirdo college kids. And I loved it. I loved it.
That sounds to me like great real life experience, though.
Oh, it was fantastic. I don't know if it was like great real life experience. And I say that because everything that I learned about radio in college came from me teaching myself, like, or learning from my peers around me. Mm-hmm. None of my classes, nothing was focused on radio, not even like a section of the class. Like, mm-hmm. So everything that I learned was just trial and error type of thing.
I don't know if I ever told you this story, but when I took, I don't remember the name of the class specifically, maybe radio production was actually the name of the class. And this, so the year must have been 1995.
Mm-hmm.
One class, it was just the lesson that day. They taught us how to cue up a record. That was the lesson that day.
Oh, wow.
They took us into a studio. They put down a record and they made us put the stylus on the record and cue it up to the song. And I remember being outraged in 1995 because it's like nobody is using records anymore. We are using CDs now.
CDs!
I mean, it couldn't have... I mean, I was just so blown away by the outdatedness of it.
And even now, back then.
Yeah, even back in 1995. I mean, now it's like...
It's all automated.
I don't know how you teach radio these days.
Well, they don't.
teach them how to use a computer, I guess. And then there's so many operating systems that are in radio. Like we use here at Q104 in Cleveland, we use a system called Wide Orbit. You know, but I have used in the past Enco. I've used Next Gen. I mean, there's just so many.
Yeah.
Like you can't just... I don't know how you teach radio in college these days. What I think the most beneficial thing that you receive from your college education is this real life experience on how to deal with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they lock themselves out of the radio station or when they say something inappropriate on air and you've got to deal with that.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of that. But even so this is... You'll appreciate this. We actually did install a new automation system at Black Squirrel Radio my junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And the GM, my junior year, she was like my best friend. And she was working on getting it up and running, but it still just wasn't quite there by the time she left. So then she left and took all of her knowledge with her. And then I had to learn this system, I mean, from the bottom up, like, and just teach myself and click on things and hope that nothing caught on fire.
Yeah.
And so I feel like even now, like, I kind of do the same thing where I'll just kind of, like, click around until I figure it out because that's just how I learned.
Yeah, I think that we're both similar in that way. I mean, because especially after you get your first job, your first real job.
Uh-huh.
If you have somebody there to show you the ropes, then you are extremely lucky.
Oh, for sure. If you have somebody to actually teach you what you're doing.
I feel like every job that I've received, it's like you get hired and then it's like you're on your own. Good luck because there's no one there to show you what to do. You've got to figure out a lot of things by yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to figure out a lot of stuff.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Some of my favorite moments, though, from that station, this is another added part of Black Squirrel Radio. We had cameras in the studio, but they weren't just cameras that, like, management, like, leaders could see. They were broadcasted to everybody. There was a website.
Oh, cool.
So, like, parents at home could sit there and, like, watch that. It's kind of creepy, honestly, if you think about it. But it worked really well for me, like, when I was program director and general manager, because I could just, like, look and see, does anybody have a drink in the studio when they're not supposed to? But I do remember there was one time somebody had a birthday cake with lit candles in the studio.
Oh, they were celebrating.
No, because you see that little thing right above your head, Bill? You see that?
Oh, a fire alarm.
A sprinkler?
Sprinkler, yeah.
Yeah, we had one of those too. And the second that it smoke hits that, it goes, and then it ruins everything in the room. So I remember
makes a lot of sense.
I remember calling this show and I was like, hey guys, so saw you had a cake today. And they were like, oh yeah, it was so-and-so's birthday. I was like, cool, happy birthday. So there's some issues with this. And they're like, I know we're not supposed to have food in the studio. I was like, no, you're right. That is issue one. Issue two, open flame. Like, we can't have that. So you guys are suspended for a week. I had to suspend a ton of shows all the time. But it was, honestly, it was pretty funny. Like, because you would have, like, one strike, two strike, three strikes, you're totally out. Like,
you're out.
Yeah, so I was the enforcer my junior year as program director. I had to fire people. I had to suspend people.
So what would happen on the first strike? You would just warn them?
Yeah, it was a warning on the first strike.
Second strike, suspension?
Yep.
How long would the suspension be if you did something that, if you broke a station rule and brought in, if you made a campfire inside the studio?
Usually, I mean, like, I want to say usually it was like a week.
A week suspension.
But that's only one show. Yeah. So sometimes it would be, like, depending on the gravity of the situation, sometimes it'd be like 2 weeks.
But then you would have to cover for that person, right?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
You just ran automated music.
Oh, yeah. How beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got it.
So that was fun, having to do that and having to figure out how to be boss lady. But also, too, we did every year or every semester, we did all night marathons where we would go on air all night. And we would go in shifts, but we would broadcast live all night on, like, the last day of the semester.
Okay.
And it was so much fun, but we would always throw a party. And we, like, I will never forget, like, my first party. I never had, like, liquor. I had only had, like, Keystone beer. And there's all this liquor because all these people are, like, 21. And I was like, oh, my God, there's so many things to drink. And I literally was like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to mix with these things. Like, I've never made a mixed drink in my life. But then my senior year, going into the all-night marathon, because we did the banquet beforehand, and then we would have party, and then all-night marathon would go from 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. And so I said, my only rules were, like, for my last banquet, I was like, I don't really care, but no booze in the building, because we're doing our banquet in Franklin Hall. No booze in the building.
Okay.
And we were going to be done with the banquet by, like, 9:10, so that's not a big ask. My little, like, freshmen, not even directors, coordinators, they were, like, freshmen and sophomore coordinators. They were so proud of themselves. They all pitched in and found a 21-year-old and bought this, like, atrociously gross handle of cheap, cheap vodka. And that was their gift to me. And I was like, I literally gave you one rule, and it was to not bring alcohol into the school building, you guys. And you couldn't, they were like, but it's a gift.
It's a gift.
And I was like, I know you worked really hard to obtain this, so thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a gift for you. It wasn't meant to be consumed inside the building. It was a gift to be.
It's still a little bold walking into Franklin Hall with a handle of vodka, would you say?
Well, again, life lessons are learned in college. So have you ever been drunk on the air then? When you were doing Black Squirrel Radio?
What do you think?
Okay. No, it's fun. It's fun when you...
I have some pictures. I'll whip them out and show you.
Yeah. It's not done as much these days. Like, there just aren't many opportunities to be drunk on the air.
I would never do it now, but...
Well, there's really no opportunity to do it.
No, I mean, but that was like... That's home. BSR was like so home for me. Like, I was so comfortable there, and I loved every single person. Like, literally, there was over 100 kids in that radio station. They were all awesome.
Well, you loved every person except for the guy that you started the first show with, angsty, whatever it was.
Yeah, hot and angsty.
Hot and angsty.
Hot and angsty. That's where it all began.
What's that guy doing now?
I have no idea. I saw him at Zephyr, I think like my senior year of college. It's the last time I saw him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, hey. And he went, hey. And that was it. Like, that's like as much as we talked.
Do you think that he knows that you're still, excuse me, do you think he knows that you're in radio, still in radio?
Honestly, I don't think so. He doesn't have socials, so.
Okay.
I doubt it.
Like, he might be like jealous that you're doing a show, but you're
maybe
partnered with me and not him. Because
maybe
hot and angsty could have been something,
but it wasn't. It only lasted one year, one school year at that. Like, really one semester if you want to get nitty gritty about it.
Did that teach you a lesson as far as I am not going to get romantically involved with a coworker?
I guess in a way, probably. Like, it wasn't really work, though. You don't get paid to be there. So
yeah.
It was just an extracurricular.
I'm writing that down, too. Getting romantically involved with coworkers.
Don't do it.
I can tell you when I learned that lesson in my life.
Uh-oh.
That was early in my career.
Yeah, that's a good one to learn early on, I would say.
With a coworker. We have so many ideas for this podcast. So many good stories. Okay, so Black Squirrel Radio, you graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Well,
what was your feeling like when you graduated? Like, what were your thoughts of radio after doing it for 4 years and learning so much and having so many interesting and unique experiences in dealing with people? Like, what were your thoughts coming out of college?
So, first of all, I felt like I was like giving away my baby, like, because I really felt like this station was my firstborn child. But I passed it down to a guy that was a year younger than me. He had been there for a long time too. I was so happy that he ended up getting GM. And he actually, I believe, like, still works at like House of Blues in Cleveland. Like, so we've all kind of stayed in the music scene, which is very cool. But out of college, I was like, there's no way I'm gonna be able to be on air, right? Like, that just seemed like such a outlandish.
Why did you think
career
that?
Because the word talent is in our job title, and I'm like, I'm not talented, like, so I can't do that. So I actually picked up a minor my junior year in marketing. So I was like, I'm gonna go for radio marketing. I want to do like promotions or something like that. Turns out that's really tough. That's also very hard to get into, and there's like no jobs. So that didn't work out very well. I ended up moving home to Brunswick, worked at a sports bar for a couple weeks, made way too much money working there, was getting way too comfortable.
That doesn't sound like a bad thing.
My mom was concerned because she was like, you just got a degree, and now are you seriously going to wait tables? And I'm like, Mom, look how much money I'm making. Like, I'm making so much money.
Isn't that funny? Because now it's like, I think we're encouraging people to make as much bank as you possibly can, like, whenever you can make it.
Right.
Like, don't even, I mean, you have college graduates living at home, staying at home so they can save money. And if you have a job where you're making a lot of money, I don't see how that's a bad thing anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I understood her logic. But so at the time, I worked there like only a couple weeks because then I ended up finding on LinkedIn a marketing event planning position. And I was like, oh, cool. Go to the interview. And it's like my first like real job interview. And I'm all dressed like nice and was like, I don't really understand like what this job position even is. I don't know. Like, I was confused coming out of the interview, but I got it. And I was like, okay. So I went back. I quit my waitressing job. Again, this is all with the mindset that like radio is outlandish. Can't do it.
Really?
Okay. And so I go into this marketing job and I spend like one day in the office and still nobody's giving me like a clear cut answer of like what this position entails. And then day two on the job, I'm asked to meet them at a Sam's Club. And it is literally selling bamboo pillows in a Costco or a Sam's Club. And I was like, this is the job. Like, this is not marketing. This is, and like, she's explaining it to me.
Yeah.
It's a pyramid scheme, basically, okay.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so I say, I'm like, so it's a pyramid scheme. And she was like, no. It's just that, like, because I'm training you, like, whatever commissions you get, I get a portion of. And then the person that trained me, I was like, that's a pyramid.
Yeah.
Your textbook describing a pyramid. So I called my mom halfway through that day, second day on the job. And I go, hey, mom, this is a pyramid scheme. Can I just leave? And she was like, yeah. So I just left and I didn't have a job. And this is my first time in many moons without a job.
You couldn't go back to the server gig?
I didn't want to. I had just quit and they really liked me too. And they were like really bummed. So I was like, I don't want to do that. But here's where we circle on back. One of my friends in college was working at, can I say the name?
Yeah.
She was working at Q92 in Alliance doing nights. And she had just moved to Cincinnati for a job. So I knew that that position was open.
Okay.
And at this point, I'm like, okay, I got nothing to lose. So I made the worst demo. I can't even listen to it. The worst demo reel I've like ever made in my life. Went to Best Buy, bought myself a microphone, created this demo, submitted it. And somehow I got the job doing nights at Q92. Somehow. And that's how it happened. And now here I am still on air.
I have to write this down too as a future potential idea. Would you ever want to play that audio on this podcast?
That would honestly be really fun. I know I for sure also have my very first hot and angsty promo on my old laptop.
I'd love to hear that. As much as you think it's cringy, like, I want to try to find some stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of my stuff is on cassette tapes.
Oh, God.
And I have no idea how to even bring that in
yeah,
here
I don't know.
And play it. Like, it's on a cassette tape. It may as well just be a rock. Like, I don't know.
You're like, what is this good for? What do I even do with this?
But I do know there's audio of me on Q104 from 1997 online.
Ah!
So I could grab that and then.
Oh, yeah. I want to hear that.
Yeah, it's...
I want to hear the beginnings.
It's not great.
It makes me cringe. I mean, honestly, though, even, like, if we were to go back and listen to, like, our first show from May, I'm going to cringe at that, too.
Fair point.
Yeah, like, I always cringe when I won't cringe if I, like, re-listen to this podcast episode right now, but ask me again in 6 months, and I'm like, oh, I can't do it now.
Yeah.
Like, who was I? No.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about. And the thing is, for me, like, I will listen to today's show that we did, and I'll listen to that podcast, and I will cringe.
Really?
Yeah. I that's how much I hate listening to myself back.
Oh, yeah.
But I've learned to, the older that I've gotten, the more I've learned to accept it. You know, and just kind of laugh at it whenever I can. So that's why, you know, if we ever do a podcast where we bring in audio of ourselves when we first started out, could be very funny.
That could be very fun. Compare them. We could grade them.
So they called you for an interview to come down to Q92.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember your initial interview?
I don't remember like too much from it. It would have been 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So 9 years ago now. I don't remember a whole lot, but...
Do you remember the first drive down?
Yes, because I had to take like some podunk country roads to get to Alliance.
It's Alliance, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It's farmland, I think.
It's literally in the middle of a field.
Yeah.
And doing nights. I remember being like, so it's funny, living downtown and coming to work so early when it's dark out. One of the biggest concerns for everybody around here has been like my safety, right? Like getting into the building this early, whatever. I was more concerned being in the middle of a field at night.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is terrifying. I remember being so scared so many times. I was on air at one point at Q92 and I asked pizza drivers. I was like, yo, if anybody's got a slow night, if you want to come on down, the address is blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Because somebody told me that the station is haunted. I don't even know if it's true. But I kept that in my brain the whole time that I worked there.
And I would believe that.
I never let go of it. Even to the point where like the sports guys there, I was friends with them from college as well. And I literally, there was one night that I was so scared. And they were coming back from a football game, like a high school football game that they were broadcasting at. I was like, I will literally pay your electric bill this month if you just stay with me till the show's over. And my friend is like, ah, no, like I got a party. I'm like, dude, Zach, no. Like, I was so upset.
So working nights in Canton and
Alliance. Alliance.
Canton,
they're different.
Canton area. Okay, no, fair point. this was true radio, right? This was live.
This was live radio, yeah.
Which is very rare mm-hmm. these days. Like, there's more recorded radio now than there is live radio.
Absolutely.
But I think so. You worked until midnight.
I really did.
It's not like you recorded and your tracks and then went home at 10 o'clock.
Nope.
You were there until midnight.
I was there until midnight. I was driving back on dark country roads at midnight. And I ended up moving back to Kent because I didn't want to move to Alliance. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, Brunswick's really far, so I can't live there. So I moved back to Kent and I lived in Kent for another year.
What was your social life back then? Because you're out of school and you're in your early 20s and I think that it's very important that you're still making friends and you have mm-hmm. a rockin' social life because that's what you're supposed to be doing in your 20s.
I mean, honestly, I would get home usually by about like 12:45, 1.
Yeah.
And more often than not, because the guy that I was dating in college and at this time, if I recall, he also worked nights. So he would get off at like 11.
Okay.
So this would be like 1 a.m. was like our 6 p.m.
So would you guys go out to the bars for like an hour?
We would.
Yeah?
We would. We would go out to the bars, grab a drink or two, go home, literally like make dinner at like 3 o'clock in the morning, watch some shows, go to sleep by like 5 or 6 a.m., wake up by like 1 p.m. and do it again.
This sounds ideal.
It really, honestly, it wasn't too bad.
I love it. I mean,
I only worked Monday through Friday, which I would say, in my 22-year-old mind, mm-hmm. that was what was most important. I was like, Monday through Friday, check. I get the weekends to myself. That's all I want. I don't care if my schedule sucks the rest of the time.
Yeah.
So.
Working 7 to midnight, and this is not a thing anymore. I don't know of many radio hosts that are hosting a live show between 7 and midnight. It's mm-hmm. very rare that it happens these days. But, yeah, I can remember when you work that shift, your social life doesn't match up with any of your friends that much.
No.
And if you tried to date, like you were lucky that you were dating a guy that had the same schedule as you.
Yeah.
Because if he worked like a regular 9-to-5 job,
we would have never seen each other.
That relationship is doomed.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the, back then, that's the trade-off. That's what you had to consider. Mm-hmm. You're like, you had to weigh your personal life versus your professional life and paying your dues and working these weird hours just to make it in your career, to advance in your career.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those two things were in direct conflict with each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was lucky that I was still living in Kent at the time, so I had a lot of friends still there. I was not like in a situation where I didn't know anybody. So I already had like built-in friends that I would see when I could, and I would spend every weekend with them still. So it wasn't too bad.
Were your friends still in Kent?
It was like half and half. So some of my friends were old. Well, they were all still in Kent, but going to school, I didn't have a ton of friends that were younger. Mm-hmm. I had a couple sprinkled in. But I would say most everybody was still living there.
Where did you live? Well, first of all, I didn't even ask you this. So when you moved out of the dorms, when you mm-hmm. moved out of Fletcher Hall, mm-hmm. where did you live through the rest of your Kent days as a student?
Okay, so my sophomore year, I moved to Eagles Landing.
Sounds so familiar.
It's
Is it still there?
Yeah.
It is?
It's like down the road from the business administration building, kind of. If you know where that's at. I'm trying to think. There's definitely a building closer to it than that. But
that might be, what's it called? Eagles Landing, Kent?
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder if that was called Glen Morris when I
It's old. It's been there a long time.
Like brown buildings?
Yes.
Yeah, I think.
Yep. And they have like big, like full floor-to-ceiling windows that don't open.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what it was called.
So it's called.
Oh, yeah, it was on Morris Road. Duh.
Yeah. So, yeah, back when I was a Kent student, that apartment complex was called Glen Morris Apartments.
Did you live there?
No, but my friends did.
Okay.
And so I was there all the time.
Yeah, so I was only there my sophomore year, and then my junior year, because I had a roommate there. My junior year, I moved into, I loved this apartment. It was a one bedroom at Ryan Place Apartments.
Oh, that sounds familiar too.
That it was right up from Holly Park. So you know where that Arby's was?
Yes.
I lived behind the Arby's. Like literally any time that I got dropped off there, like because Uber was starting to become a thing, like by the end of my college. And I'd be like, oh yeah, just like right over here. And they're like, at Arby's? And I'm like, just keep driving. Like, it's just, you have to go through the parking lot. Like, or like when somebody would come pick me up, they'd be like, are you at Arby's? Like, no.
Alyssa just asked me if I know where the Arby's was. And yes, I did.
It had a huge sign.
So back, it did, the big cowboy hat.
It was like
hat.
A big, like ginormous, like 20 foot sign or something. Maybe yeah. Not 20 foot, but what like it was
name?
Big.
What is the name for those hats? It's obviously, it looks like a giant cowboy
like
hat.
Like a 10-gallon.
10-gallon hat.
Is that what it
That's
is?
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So back then, Arby's used to run this deal. I'm sure they still don't run this deal. They used to have a 5 for $5 deal.
Oh, that sounds so good. I love Arby's, by the way.
5 roast beef sandwiches for $5.
I would slam all 5 in one sitting.
And when I say $5, I don't mean $5 and then
some change.
Yeah. I mean, $5. You gave them a $5 bill. You got 5 roast beef sandwiches. And that would be my dinners for the week. Like I would buy it on a Sunday or a Monday. And then I would have a roast beef sandwich every single day that week.
You want to talk about some college logic? That right there. Yes. But also my college logic, especially when I was a student. And this is so bad. I would smoke cigarettes and because it curbs your appetite. And I was on the go because I had at least 2 jobs all through college, plus a full course load. And so I was like just on the go constantly. So I would buy like a pack of cigarettes for the week and they would last me like 1 week. The pack was like $4.50. And that was like my lunches all week because I was like, oh, this will curb my appetite through the day.
That's great.
Yeah, got out of college, that stopped real quick.
I think I'm writing down something else. I was going to ask you the question, but I think it could be another podcast. Jobs we had in college.
That's a fun one.
I had some unusual things I was doing in college outside of the radio stuff.
Reselling feet pics.
Oh my God, I wish that was a thing, but no, it wasn't a thing back then. Like back then, what would selling feet pics, that would be me taking pictures of my feet. Having to develop the pictures at a photo mat because there's no way to digitally, you know, I'd be using like an Instacamera or something like that. And then standing on a corner and selling them basically because there's
feet pictures.
There's no way to upload pictures to
get
email.
Get your feet pics. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Ryan Place, my one bedroom there. I loved it. It was fantastic. I painted it. And then I moved out of there. And then moved back to Brunswick for a couple weeks. I will say, when I moved out, though, that whole building got bed bugs. And somebody got shot and killed.
Oh, God.
And somebody did not know how to work the gun. I think it was an accident.
Scary.
But that was like right after I moved out. And then I moved to River Street Apartments.
River
like,
Street.
The ones like literally right across the river. So I was really close to the bars.
Oh, right there by Franklin Avenue. So you just crossed the bridge and...
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So that was my whole time at Kent. I lived one more place, but only for like 2 months. And then I moved to San Diego.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this seems like a good place to stop.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's more future stories that will come out of that about how you went from Alliance to San Diego.
Big jump.
Okay.
Big difference.
All right. That'll be on a future episode as well. I love it that I have like three more podcast ideas for future podcasts just from recording one show, just recording one podcast today.
The magic of Kent State.
Thank you very much for downloading this podcast. And if you're listening right now, thank you for listening to the end. If you get a chance, please rate us. Please review us. That would be awesome. I think that helps. I don't really know how that helps.
I don't really know.
But our company likes it when people do that.
And if any of the places that we mentioned like ring a bell for you, if you went to Kent or maybe just went to visit friends, I would love to know if you have any stories at Eagles Landing or what was it called? Glen Morris
Apartments.
Yeah. Or those or Franklin Hall or Black Squirrel Radio. Hit me with all that nostalgia, please.
Yeah. I think the best way to get in touch with us is through our Instagram at the Q Morning Show, which is the Instagram that we use for the radio show, but we might as well use it for this podcast as well. Thank you for listening to the Can't Read, Can't Write podcast.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.